The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Tuesday. Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. A story we forgot yesterday because it came out on Friday, and I apologize for it. I had commented on it over the weekend on social media, and yeah. I just felt so bad that I forgot yesterday because it's a very, very important story, and people want to know why.
Yeah.
And what makes it different. And this is where Bernie Sanders' campaign, his staffers announced that they're going to be unionized. And it's the first presidential campaign where the staffers will be unionized. Well, of course. Everybody knows you can't trust a socialist to treat their employees fairly.
Right.
So there was really no big news there. And it's like the campaign was celebrating it when all it shows is that you can't trust a socialist.
Well, can you think about, look at what happened over the weekend with Beto. It was all apologies, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that, too. I'm sorry about that. It's so funny. How many times are you going to be able to call him out that he feels he needs to keep apologizing? And what he needs to do is wait that if he ever becomes president, that's when you apologize. See, that's when you go on your apology tour. He's doing it wrong. So with Bernie, think of the thought behind that. He's going to protect his workers from him.
Yes. Bernie is proud that he can protect his workers from himself.
Now, I might do the same thing because, well, if you've ever met me, you know why. They all need protection from me. I'm not a nice guy. But can you imagine that? I'm going to unionize my campaign to give them protection from me. That's the whole idea. I mean, ultimately, he's the employer. If he's not running, they're not employed.
Exactly.
Oh, here's the other thing. What happens if he drops out?
Does he have to give 60 days notice?
Where are the benefits? What happens? That's what I would love to know. I mean, I know union workers get laid off all the time.
Well, will there be severance, or when the money runs out, will the donors be forced to pay extra severance in a labor dispute, or would Bernie have to pay it out of his own pocket and give up one of his own homes? I just throwing
now,
that out.
Here's what you need to know if you're one of those working for Bernie and you're unionized. You need to know that your dues are going to help the Democrats get elected. Just remember that. That's the problem.
Which he is technically won, but I say technically.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. I love that story, though, because they were all cheering him. And all I could think was, well, wait a minute. Bernie's saying, yes, the first campaign to be unionized. Why are you bragging? It means they don't trust you.
Yes.
Finally.
They're seeking protection from you.
The first socialist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first outed socialist, self-outed socialist.
Now, what union are they a member of? You were the member of the steelworkers.
Right? When I was a union member, I was a member of the United Steelworkers and the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers.
So, what union do they belong to?
I don't know.
The United. Nobody cares about your emails. Workers.
United. The rent's too damn high.
You're right. United Free College Workers? I wonder what union they belong to. Because here's my question. What if they get together with their union boss and decide that they actually want to give money to the Democrats? That they want to give money, I mean, to another Democrat.
To another Democrat, yeah. That's...
As you mentioned a minute ago, because that thought went through my head when you know, because he's an independent. Yeah, no, he's not. He should run as an independent.
I saw the headline the other day and read like the first sentence and went, well, I don't need to go any
further
on it.
It was just
laughable, the fact that he was bragging about it and everybody's bragging about it. It's like, well, the only thing it shows is that his employees, his staff, think about this. Because why do you join a campaign? Do you join a campaign because it's a job and you need money? Or do you join a campaign because you believe in the ideology of someone?
Right.
Think about this. Mm-hmm. You work for a campaign. I remember being in John Edwards' campaign office in 2004 in Des Moines for the Iowa caucus. Because I was covering it
You were working for John Edwards.
No, I was not working for John Edwards. I was covering it. Mm-hmm. And all these young women, their eyes just mesmerized as he is walking around the room.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
They weren't doing it for the pay. They were doing it because they idolized him and his ideas. The Bernie Sanders people are supposedly, you thought, were working because they idolize the ideas.
Yeah.
Well, think about this. I'm working for you because I believe in you, but I don't trust you. Ha!
Well, I mean,
I love it.
How do they figure out union scale? And what if one of them has a problem with it? Who do they go to? You know what I mean? Because they're going to have to, if they're part of a union, they're going to have meetings, right?
I guess, yeah, they would have to have a couple of meetings.
Does the boss go to the meetings?
Or
do they have meetings while he's on the road at one of his three homes?
Here's Bernie Sanders unionized in first for presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign announced Friday would be the first major presidential campaign to have unionized workforce, as party of activists push Democrat candidates to mirror the progressive platforms within their own campaigns. Over the past week, a majority of the staff's bargaining unit employees designated United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 400, to represent them.
Okay.
The campaign stayed neutral during organizing efforts and voluntarily recognized the union once a majority of staffers signed union cards, according to both the campaign and the union. The union president said in a statement he expects the decision will mean pay parity and transparency for Sanders' campaign, along with no gender bias or harassment, and equal treatment for every worker, whether they're in Washington, D.C., Iowa, New Hampshire, or anywhere else. They added that the union will represent all employees below the rank of deputy director.
Okay.
And negotiations for a collective bargaining agreement will begin as soon as possible. Why? Because you can't trust Bernie.
Well, can you imagine if they walk out because they can't get the pay they want? Please make that happen. Please.
Well, you know, the interesting thing
is they're on strike.
And you and I have talked about this a long time before. The modern union movement in this country, you think about FDR, you think about George Meany, who was president of the AFL-CIO from 1955 to 1979, the initial director, and you and I had this conversation a long time ago. They were absolutely anti-union for government.
Right.
Because they believed, as the modern union movement believed, the goal of the union was to share in the profits of a company who was making profits.
Government doesn't have profits.
Government doesn't make a profit. Campaigns don't make a profit.
No.
That's not the goal. The goal is not to make a profit.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're going after the taxpayers, and the initial union movement in this country, the modern union movement of FDR and George Meany, of the AFL-CIO, absolutely against unions outside of the commercial workplace. Mm-hmm. Unions were for-profit companies to share. That was the morality, to share the profits of a company, not to go after the taxpayer or, in this case, the donor to a campaign.
Right.
It shows you how it's changed in this country. So I think it's just it's very important to understand that, because most people don't know that. Most because, the as you see, the only growth in the union sector is in government, which is exactly where the modern union movement never wanted to go and never expected to go until they found out, oh, wait a minute, there's money there.
Okay, so here's my question. They're going to get union breaks, right? Which includes the call-out centers. you're either going to do it or you're not. You're either going to have unionized workers or you're not. I mean, they're going to have to, there's going to be union breaks. You're not going to be able to, there's going to be rules according to the union.
Well, will be one of the first things they protest, the robocalls.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a person making that call.
Right.
Not a robot.
You need to be paying an individual.
An individual.
Each phone call. And you don't need to be buying expensive TV ads. You need to be paying the union workers more. Tell me where I'm wrong. Think about it. Because if the idea is to treat any of those and all of those workers fairly, you're overpaying for TV ads.
Does that mean volunteers for the Bernie campaign are now done with? No volunteers?
Ooh, there's a question.
You can't volunteer for a campaign anymore?
Right. Because how do you not unionize all, right?
Yeah. Because I remember on Happy Days, Fonzie volunteered. He was a volunteer for Ike's campaign.
Ike, yeah. I like Ike, that whole
thing. I like Ike. Uh-huh. My bike like Ike. My bike likes Ike.
Yeah.
For anybody under the age of 70, Happy Days was a sitcom in the 70s.
Now, if Arthur Fonzarelli ran for office, would he do like Beto, put his name, you know, a nickname up there, like, you know, the Fonz? The Fonz. Beto. He's like the Fonz. Except not a motorcycle, a skateboard. I'm telling you, folks, why would you ever watch fiction? Why would you ever read fiction?
You know,
it is nowhere near as entertaining.
And this is not meant to be an insult at all.
And yeah, we're going to insult him the next
time. No, this is not meant to. It's just. There, you and I saw it side by side.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great similarity of the face shape of Beto O'Rourke to Butthead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is.
I mean, there is. When you put him side by side, it's like, wow, it's Butthead. And I'm not
my
doing that.
My fellow Americans.
The first time I saw it, I went, wow, it's not even exaggerated. There really is a similarity. You can.
Well, and he has a similar ideas. Sits on the couch doing nothing all day. I'm not sorry. The problem with the whole imagery of this, of you look at two major campaigns now that have launched, okay?
Yeah.
Kamala Harris launches several weeks ago, and she does the normal, you know, go do the interviews. He launches and spends his first weekend apologizing for everything.
Oh, there were some comments on it yesterday that sort of mirrored our comments. We'll get to that coming up. But, yeah, we needed to analyze the whole Bernie Sanders and what it means, him unionizing.
Right.
It means they don't believe in what he says. They just want a paycheck, and they can't trust him. Can't trust a socialist.
Right. Well, and you brought up a good question. What's a volunteer going to say?
Can't be any more campaign interns, right?
Right. I guess you could have an intern. I don't know. Can you?
As far as I know.
Bill Clinton would know.
As far as I know, in 2004, and this is when I covered the Democrat, this is Bush's midterm, so there was no challenge, so there was only a Democrat caucus
right. In
Des Moines. And I wanted to see how it all worked. And so I remember going to John Kerry's storefront.
Mm-hmm.
Actual storefront in downtown Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
The storefront that he had. I remember going to John Edwards. I think I went to Al Sharpton's. And the majority of they bust in volunteers who made the phone calls.
Right. Yeah.
Those were volunteers.
Yeah. They weren't. Trump brought in Ted Cruz. Yeah. To make phone calls. You don't remember that? You're shaking your head like you don't remember.
I don't remember that, no. Oh,
Ted Cruz making phone calls for Trump.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, that's, yeah, you looked at me. I was like, what are you talking about?
You were kind of like, what?
Okay, yes.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Wow, that was more submissive than
there's a question.
That was more submissive than what's-his-name from New Jersey sitting behind him the one time.
Oh, yeah.
On stage.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't think of his name. I got mind blank clear. Former governor of New Jersey.
Chris Christie.
Chris Christie.
Was he sitting behind him? I thought he was getting on a plane.
No, he was standing behind him. He was speaking. That's...
Hey, Chris, go get on that plane. Okay. Yeah, I. How much did Ted Cruz get? Did Ted Cruz get union scale? That's what I want to know. We're looking for all the answers.
Oh my gosh! You got a good memory.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, we got a great show ahead coming up here. Half of Americans say Trump has been part of a witch hunt. Beto says that he needs to be here to bring America together, but everything out of his mouth over the weekend since he announced, besides apologizing, has been a far-left position.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Nunes, who's Twitter for censoring the 737 MAX investigation, new poll, 3 in 5 millennials say life is more stressful than ever before. Well, if you're a millennial, you're what?
I don't know. What's the low end of the millennial age group?
Millennials are up to 45, something like that.
Hmm.
45.
All right.
Than ever before.
Hmm.
Libs going after Putin for his fake news law, but a Democrat is proposing the same kind of law. The whole McCain and Trump feud and more all coming up, plus your calls and comments if you'd like to get in. Lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. There's just so many news out there. Americans to bet $8.5 billion on March Madness.
$8.5 billion?
$8.5 billion.
Wow.
Nearly 50 million Americans will wager $8.5 billion on the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
Now, does that include all the, like, the office pool things?
Yeah, I think that's...
Okay.
I think it does, yes.
Okay.
I think it does. Well, they said no, because a large chunk of this year's wagers will be placed illegally. More than 40 million people will bet an estimated $4.6 billion on 149 million brackets. Look, I haven't had my team's shirt on today,
yeah.
As you noticed here.
Right.
The latest, their last tournament championship.
Right.
That they just won.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Many Nebraska towns have become islands. There are dozens of streams flooded, records broken in Nebraska, many there under evacuation notices. The good news this week looks to be relatively dry for the region, but we do have a low-pressure area passing through the state today, which will provide some more potential snow for southern Nebraska. That'll be all rain for Kansas, mainly right between I-80 and I-70 to the south, so along the Nebraska-Kansas state line. That'll be a quick-moving system and out of there by tomorrow. Of course, all that water is going to be flowing downstream toward the Gulf of Mexico through the Mississippi River and other tributaries, and the lowlands of the Mississippi are already experiencing massive flooding, so we'll have more to continue through the week to come. Spring rains arriving early. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. And there I have it on here, and I've never, ever got my shirt on, but I've never, ever filled out a bracket in my whole life. Ever.
Hmm.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren.
Every vote matters. And the way we can make that happen... is that we can have national voting, and that means get rid of the Electoral College and everybody.
There you go.
All right. There you go. Let the larger states decide.
Yes, we really do have a bunch of idiots in this country.
Yeah, yeah. Yay!
We really.
Yay! If I live in a smaller state, it won't matter. Yay!
Well, they don't understand. They have no idea. I wanted to get to this because just to show you how I didn't want to bother with Elizabeth Warren. The only other thing I guess over the weekend that I didn't mention yesterday was that she came out and she has no sympathy at all for anybody who fraudulently tries to get into any type of educational system.
Okay. And Beto's apologizing for being a white guy. All right.
Well, yeah, well, she never used any. She never falsified anything.
No.
Because she was 1,024th.
Yes.
Oh, very quickly here, I want to get back to just one note here. The only other candidate who is considering unionizing. Former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro has pledged to pay all campaign workers at least $15 an hour and support his staff if they decide to organize. I just wanted to mention that because I know we got a lot of Castro fans down in San Antonio. Very, very excited.
Right.
By the way, I'm being sarcastic. Yeah, yeah. I get the opposite from a lot of people.
I don't see... You know, there was a call for him, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe, to run. But here's my concern. I don't think identical twins should be allowed to be president. Because you know his brother's going to step in. He's like, man, I need the day off. Can you step in?
Wow, Dave.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that not the dumbest movie ever?
Yeah, that was the dumbest movie.
I would have taken a bullet for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fake president.
As if there was a guy who was a complete, and I mean dead on identical, and the media had not discovered it yet.
Well, no, he was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what, that they hadn't, well, that all if, the more
if,
reason.
If he was a Republican, they would have figured it out right away.
No, I mean before that. So, Dave's in his little town, right?
Yes.
And you've got a president, a sitting president, and this guy looks identical. So nobody,
none of his friends called
the media and said, you're not going to believe it. And then it's him.
And then remember, after he faked that he was president, and then he finally stepped away and the real president, who was in a coma, ended up dying. And then he walked away. Remember, he walked away from the presidency. Mm-hmm. And then he was running for political office, apparently somewhere in Washington.
Yeah. And no one noticed that.
And nobody ever put the two and two together that you're an identical twin to this.
No one called anyone.
And remember, do you remember when he was running for political office, Dave? Who was the actor who portrayed him? Can't think of his name.
Oh, I'm blanked on his name.
He's running for political office, and what he's doing is remember he's in there talking to some guy. Look, we're trying to keep this woman's heat on, as if he was, that's what he was doing, as he was personally involved with every single constituent and every problem that they had.
Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline, yes. Yeah. Kevin Kline was, yes.
None of it made sense, but it doesn't have to, I guess, right?
But it's interesting because for example, the lead article, if you see the lead headline in Drudge, it's about the Putin law. Mm-hmm. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Insulting Putin may now land you in jail under a new Russian law. President Vladimir Putin signed laws punishing online media and individuals for spreading fake news or material that's considered insulting to Russian officials. Then I go to theweek.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here. Andrew Yang is the Ross Perot for millennials. Remember Andrew Yang last week? And I do remember that Ross Perot talking about the fact that there will be people out there that will be just murdering, as Andrew Yang did last week. Mm-hmm. Talked about that the Chinese in this country will soon be like the Jews because the white minority, that of course are white supremacists, will treat Chinese eventually like Jews. Whatever. I mean, it was just insane what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But this in the week here, Andrew Yang is a Ross Perot of millennials. And most of the 2020 Democratic candidates have websites full of donation buttons and widely and windy nonsense about hope and unity. You would have to go a long way to discover what, if anything, most of them have to say about public policy, not Yang. His is the most detailed platform I have ever seen from any candidate in a primary election. And it is also far and away the most interesting. You go to under the policy tab, there are a series of headlines that direct you to Yang's positions on everything from tort reform to the regulation of artificial intelligence. It is certainly an eclectic range. Yang supports universal health care, the reform of student loan industry, the implementation of a postal banking system. What a dumb idea. free financial counseling for Americans. He wants to eliminate robocalling and increase public funding for the arts and local newspapers. He would like to protect children from smartphones and to pay college athletes. He argues rightly that the best way to ensure it. Now, you got to listen to this statement. He argues rightly that the best way to ensure that wealthy people pay their fair share of taxes is to impose a VAT tax, something that would also help to restructure the economy so that it is not organized around endless wasteful consumption of cheap goods. And then finally, in it, do you hate fake news? Yang has proposed the creation of a news and information ombudsman, a kind of imperial fact checker who would award media liars heavy fines instead of Pinocchios. If Trump ever proposed something like that, they would call him what? Hitler and a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
When he just says something should be done about the media, they call him a fascist. Here's Andrew Yang.
That has a plan.
That has a plan to punish the government would decide what is fake news and fine because it would be an ombudsman. No, it wouldn't be. And he even calls it. Look at it. He even calls it an imperial. Make sure I get it right. An imperial fact checker. That would be a government bureaucrat who would decide what is good news and what is fake news.
A fake news czar.
A fake news czar. That's what he calls it. A fake news czar. It's actually in the one of the headlines.
Yeah.
And this is, and again, this is from The Week, this nation's longest running liberal publication promoting the government decide what is good news or bad news, or excuse me, what is correct, true news or fake news. And you would fine people.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to fine the New York Times, right?
And this is something that they view as good. But the other point is, when he talks about the VAT tax, something that would also help to restructure the economy so that it is not organized around endless and wasteful consumption of cheap goods. Who the hell is anybody to tell us what an economy should be and what the hell I buy or don't buy? You know, I just want to say this because this ticks me off more than anything. You want to know the difference between a conservative and a liberal? You want to know the difference between a conservative in the Republican Party, the few that are left, and a liberal in the Democrat Party? Liberals continually want to tell people how to live their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell you how to live your life. I don't want to make your decisions for you. They do. If I was running for president today, that'd be what I'd be promoting. They want to tell you how to live your life in every aspect of your life. Look at Andrew Yang. As The Week talks about here, Well, the VAT tax, because we need to restructure our economy so it's not focused on wasteful and useful products. Who the hell is the government to decide what is wasteful and useful?
In other words, limit what you can buy.
Limit what you can buy. By the way, hurt an economy.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Your money, the idea of that VAT tax, which is a compounding tax, this is something that is, and also a hidden tax. You're not going to see that effect all along the supply chain of whatever item you buy.
Okay, no more double hockey sticks here. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, I just, H-E, double hockey sticks, no more. But it just is so obvious. Conservatives, we don't want to tell you how to live your life. Conservative libertarians don't want to do that. The left, that's all you want to do. The left that used to be for freedom. And the 60s left, get out of my life. Let me do what I want. Now, the whole concept that there's such a concept as free love, that was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Free love. It ain't free. But everything else was really, we don't trust government. We don't want government in our lives. Now it's we want government in every little stinking aspect of our lives. If you're a young person out there, what's wrong with you? If you're supporting
purchase.
That?
Every purchase would be greatly increased in terms of the price with a VAT tax.
In order to do what? And by the way, it would hurt the poor and the middle class. Will hurt the poor the most.
Right.
The poor would be hurt the most.
And they'll sell it to you and have you believe that the money that they raise through the VAT tax is coming to you.
Well, it's always got to me that when they talk about corporate taxes or VAT taxes, and we've always talked about it to zero argument from the left.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the left that is always attempting to put a stealth tax on the poor. They're always trying to hurt the poor the most and do it in a stealthy way. Let's do a corporate tax. Let's do a VAT tax. Let's make it so it's a secret tax that you don't see on your receipt.
Yep. It's funny when you look at the breakdown of, well, they did the same thing with the airlines. Remember the airline tickets?
Yeah.
No, you need to show just the total. Don't show the breakdown. Don't show the taxes. Don't. Well, why not? Can you imagine if they broke down the VAT tax? Can you imagine if they broke down like all of the items that contain sugar and they included the cost of the sugar tariff for that one product with every receipt? Now, true, some people wouldn't read it, but a lot of people would. It would make a big difference. It's like we said with the income tax. If they came to your door every payday, people would be asking questions. What are you doing with my money? But a VAT tax? Look, I don't want the federal government. I don't like the fact that the IRS, is all of my business in terms of my career, my job. It's none of their business what I do for a living. None. But yes, the IRS gets all up in your business. Damn. And now he wants to take it even further. With controlling everything you purchase,
and
the price would skyrocket.
And the important thing is that you have the Week, which is the nation's longest liberal publication, that views this as a breath of fresh air. Andrew Yang, this is wonderful.
The president tweets about Saturday Night Live and the world goes crazy.
Yep.
We'll come after the media and we'll promote a massive VAT tax. That's his plan.
Well, you tell me.
And it's in his plan.
With everything that Trump has done, who attacked the media more? Obama?
Right.
Who went after the media more? Obama or Trump?
Hmm.
Maybe not in words, but in actions.
Right.
Obama.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, we'll get to more of your calls and comments following the top of the hour. A new study out. 3 in 5 millennials say life more stressful now than ever before. I'm not kidding. Here's the headline. from slow Wi-Fi to broken phone screens.
Oh, boy.
To zero likes on social media.
Oh, here we go.
Everyday stressors are causing young adults to struggle falling asleep 138 nights each year, researchers say.
Slow Wi-Fi, a broken phone screen. Oh, my goodness. No likes? Oh, what has the world come to?
No air conditioning?
No air conditioning? We don't have any AC right now.
Well,
our friends in the north are going, what?
Exactly.
Is this a repeat from last summer?
No.
It's Texas. Yeah. Only if we could only solve the world's problems for these people, Gary. No likes.
We will have the results of this survey coming up.
I can't wait.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Okay. According to a new survey, about 3 out of 5 millennials, 58%, feel life is more stressful right now than ever before. The survey also pointed to numerous causes of the frustration for this young segment. Many feel their overall stress level is caused by the accumulation of daily micro stressors. We can add that now.
Yeah, micro stressors.
To your vocabulary, micro stressors. Seemingly trivial experiences such as being stuck in traffic, waiting for appointments, or various smartphone issues. For example, losing one's wallet or credit card ranked as the top source of stress for respondents. 1 in 5 say they'll even be more stressful if their smartphone screen broke.
Oh, no.
For more than 2 in 5 millennials, 41%, a damaged phone screen is worse than seeing their check engine light flash on their car.
Right, because with a check engine light, you just keep driving and ignore it.
Meanwhile, getting into an argument with a partner was the second greatest source of stress for participants overall, but nearly 1 in 5 agreed that getting 0 likes on a social media post is a more stress-inducing experience. 1/3 feel that having their phone die is a more miserable scenario than seeing a fraudulent charge on their credit card bill. Yeah, I know. I know you and I think differently on that one. Completely. For instance, researchers found that the average remaining battery percentage for when the millennial begins to feel stress is 23%. While gridlock is the third most common cause of stress for young adults, 30% of those surveyed agreed that slow Wi-Fi was even more stressful than slow traffic. About half of the survey respondents said, so millennials couldn't handle dial-up. When I was young. About half of the respondents said they don't feel they deal with stress well in general. And 2/3 said they'd like to find more coping methods. You know what our coping method was?
What?
Deal with it.
Well, you know, what's funny is we didn't have any of these problems.
No.
Because if my rotary phone broke, I would say, hey, mom and dad, the phone broke. I'm going next door to borrow the phone.
I can't use the phone. I have a party line. My neighbor's always on it.
Yeah. Imagine traveling back in time. Telling everybody, oh, no, no, no. In the future, we have phones that will show you pictures on them. You can walk anywhere with these phones. You can Google the internet. Wait, what? We got to talk about something else now.
Google. What's Google? There'll be a company that you will love and then who will become the devil.
Well, okay. There will be, you see those books over there, those encyclopedias? Yeah, okay. There's some of that. It's called Wikipedia. Wicca what? Yeah, Wikipedia. Why is it called that? I don't know. Don't ask me questions. What else can you do with it? Find any answer to any question ever. Really? Yeah, right there in the palm of your hand. Really?
Stress is not an abstract issue. It's a significant problem and doesn't necessarily have to be caused by one large inciting incident, said the head of the chief researcher here of this study.
Yeah.
No matter what's causing our stress, we should take care to be proactive about finding solutions before it begins affecting our health. Like I said, deal with it. Researchers compiled the top 20 list of stressors for millennials. And though arriving first to a party did not make the list, that's us. That's,
right.
That's us old timers.
Right.
Well, I'm the first one here.
First one.
22% participants said that experience to be more brutal than a job interview, arriving at a party first. Another 35% find that sticking to plans is more stressful than missing out on them. How is this stress affecting millennials? The survey found that participants struggled to fall asleep nearly 3 nights per week, about 138 nights per year, because of various issues.
Right.
Top 20 stressful scenarios: losing a wallet or credit card, arguing with a partner, commute traffic delays, losing a phone, arriving late to work, slow Wi-Fi, phone battery dying, forgetting phone charger, losing, misplacing keys, number 11. Now, that's number one for me.
Misplacing keys?
Yeah, because it always happens when I'm coming to work.
Yeah, right.
I know I'm going to find them.
Or running from the cops. Yeah,
I know I'm going to find them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just at 5 minutes, you know.
Right.
And they are always the last place that I look.
Right. For me, they're always like the second to the last place. I actually keep looking after I find them.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number 12, paying bills. Number 13, job interviews. Number 14, phone screen breaking. Then credit card bills. Check engine light coming on. School loan payments. Job security. Choosing what to wear. And number 20, washing dishes.
Washing dishes
is stressful?
That's stressful?
I mean, I might not want to do it, but that's not stressful.
I actually don't mind cleaning. I don't always have the time to do, you know, all the cleaning I want to do, but...
Thank you very much. It's that time of the month. Every month I go look in one room and I do all the baseboards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that time of the month to do that.
Right.
So, thanks. And I don't get stressful at all doing that.
No, I find cleaning very therapeutic.
Same with me?
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody always asks me, they say, why don't you get a maid? And I went, nah, it's my job.
I really don't want somebody else... You know, because I would just follow that person around the house saying, hey, you missed a spot. So, no.
Not much stresses me out. Not much really ever did stress me out.
Well, okay, so,
To lose a night's sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like...
You mean anything to the point where you would lose sleep over it?
Yeah, I don't... I've lost a job and slept like a baby that night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, serious matters, yeah, when, you know, family member is sick or something like that.
That's kept me awake.
You know, but like stressors like traffic. I will say this. I don't see how people that work during the day put up with it. Because like on a, if I have to go somewhere during the day, you know, if I have an appointment or something, I'm like, no. You people got to get better at this. This is just wrong.
I don't care what anybody says. The best part about working this shift by far is not having to drive in the Dallas area, in the Dallas Metroplex, in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex during the daytime.
Right.
I will say that is the one thing. And maybe it's because, again, now I do have to prepare for it. If I'm going to drive across town, number one, I've got everything out, all the GPS out, all the different things out, traffic, where's it going to be? So normally I miss it. But when I don't miss it, I'm not happy.
Yeah. No, I just keep wondering how people do that every day. Because there are areas in just about every major city where you know you're going to run into, you know, a slowdown or a full stop. In Georgia, they call it Atlanta.
A friend of mine, she used to tell me she used to go from one side, from like near Fort Worth to Dallas every single day.
Yeah. I have friends that do that and have been doing it for decades.
And she would tell me it's about an hour and a half in the morning, and sometimes it can take over 2 hours to get home in the afternoon. Now, she doesn't work that job anymore. But when she did, she said, one time, I'll never forget, she called me and said, what are you doing? She goes, well, I figured I haven't talked to you in a while, and I've got some time now on my hands. I'm like, oh, you didn't lose your job? She said, no, I'm in traffic. I'll be here for the next hour. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, my wife, on certain days when she was working at this one place that was, as the crow flies, probably 8 miles, to get home, it was around 45 minutes on the average for 8 miles. No, because here's the thing. You can't buy back that time.
The only other stressful thing, and this is when I worked in Chicago back about 25 years ago. I'll never forget going into work one morning. And everybody seemed to be going 65 to 70 miles an hour, but they were all 5 feet in front or behind you.
Mm-hmm.
I've never experienced that anywhere I've ever lived where people would go that fast and be that close to each other. Not even in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I haven't experienced that. There's people seem to understand the buffer in Chicago. No. When I lived in Portland, I used to get ticked off all the time. Anybody in Portland listening? On the Banfield. And traffic would stop for no reason at all. You'd be going whatever the miles an hour, 60, 65 miles an hour, and all of a sudden the traffic would slow down. And you'd be in there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes in a traffic jam, and all of a sudden it would just start speeding up.
Right.
And you're looking for the emergency vehicles. There are no emergency vehicles anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That was stressful. You could tell I'm raising my voice right there. That was stressful. Because you couldn't understand, there was no explanation for the slowdown, except someone had to be an idiot.
What do they say? The rule of thumb in traffic is one guy taps his brake and 5 miles back, traffic will come to a complete stop.
Yeah. Yep.
And so...
Seemed to happen more in Portland than everywhere I ever lived.
Well, we've expanded the freeways to no end here in our area, and still... You still get the same congestion. I just don't know that they expanded enough.
I was driving the last two Monday nights. I forgot to tell you about it. I was driving. It's like the traffic was more than usual. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Is there a ball game coming, getting out somewhere? Or what's going on? And everybody was still going 70.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there were twice as many cars on the road, which is still not a lot of vehicles.
Right.
But I'm used to nothing on the roads. When I'm coming into work, it's boom.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody might be quarter mile in front of me and a quarter mile behind me.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, somebody starts invading my space. And I laugh about it because I automatically get irked. I go, what's all this traffic for? And then I burst out laughing, but there really is no stress about it. I really don't get stressed much about anything except the serious stuff, maybe.
Because
the little stuff. I may scream and then I laugh about it. I can see the humor in it immediately if I get stressed about something that's worthless.
Right.
And then I'm like, well, that's why I have this vehicle with the great sound system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go 2 miles an hour. Crank it up.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the flying cars. They keep showing me pictures on the interweb, but I need them to hurry that up.
I was reading about the private plane Uber attempting to kick off in California.
Yeah. There were a couple of companies that are trying to launch that. I don't know what the market would be. I guess, you know, because if you think about like leasing a jet, I haven't done it, but I know someone who has. And essentially they have a jet. I mean, they have to plan it. They can't just,
right,
you know, pull up their app and all of a sudden get on a plane. But they, you know, if they've got a trip, they don't have to, you know, pay for the maintenance. That you just pay your monthly lease, whatever it is. And for this person, it actually, because he owns a business, it actually was better because of the number of people that were flying every month. And they were all going, of course, to the same destinations. And so it actually saved them a tiny bit of money, but it saved them a lot of time. They didn't have to, you know, work out airline tickets and everything else.
This was a study done by studyfinds.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do.
Yeah. Can you imagine? And it makes you wonder, though. What if all of a sudden, all right, we get to 5G, right? And then everybody's reliant on 5G for, you know, a long time. And all of a sudden, the system, it just goes down. It just goes away. How will people, now, there's going to be a lot of things built in to that. You know, if we ever get to fully autonomous vehicles, a smart home, that kind of thing. So there would be some real concerns, but I mean,
there's got to be redundancies.
Well, yes. And if people couldn't use their smartphone. Okay. Let's just make it simple. Facebook had an outage the other night. I didn't know it because I was asleep during that time. What if Facebook were down for like 10 days?
I was using Facebook when Messenger went down and a bunch of other stuff went down.
Right.
And it got to be a little bit frustrating because I was using it at the moment, but then I just laughed and said, okay, can't send you this. Talk later.
Imagine, though, that it goes out for 10 days, 20 days.
People would freak.
Yeah. I mean, if John Lennon wanted to write an important song, imagine there's no Facebook.
I wonder if you can.
It's easy if you try.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on driver wellness. Maintaining a healthy diet while on the road requires a strong commitment. Instead of raiding the truck stop's junk food section, consider some of these options to maintain a healthier style of eating. Bring a portable cooler or refrigerator in the truck and power it with a 12-volt outlet. Another option to bring along is a mini slow cooker to make meals while you drive. Stock your cab with healthy eating options. Fruits and veggies like apples, oranges, or carrots. Mixed nuts or whole grain crackers are healthier options than chips. To quench your thirst, ditch the drinks loaded with sugar and instead grab some water, tea, or unsweetened coffee. Eating healthy on the road isn't easy, but it can be done. Good luck! This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal.
We got a ton of new polls out there. None, though, since just the one for the Wisconsin Democratic primary that we brought you yesterday. Nothing except that since O'Rourke announced. Hmm. And he only had six in that one. I just want to see how the Democrats respond to the fact that he's in. But a ton of other polls out there, including one on Ocasio-Cortez, one on the witch hunt.
Oh.
And then the Trump-Meghan McCain dispute going on, family feud.
Right.
going on there and getting past there, as we have said, getting past the personal and what are actually the specifics and the allegations against, as we covered a little bit yesterday, of McCain at that point. And as we have said, the justification of Trump, what's that saying about sometimes the paranoia is justified?
Yeah, right.
And when you look at what's gone on the last 2 years to make him out to be a traitor,
mm-hmm.
You may not like Trump. Saying that he's a traitor is a huge, huge leap.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
Yeah, we'll get to that coming up.
Right Wing Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. RedEyeRadioShow.com, that's the website. We do podcasts. If you miss a show, you can go back, you can listen to it. If you miss part of a show, you can go back, you can listen to it. We also have the Extra Mile podcast, talking to people from the trucking industry on a regular basis. We're going to talk, in fact, got some conversations coming up on hours of service, ELDs, and much more, drivers. So make sure that you go to redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast. And don't forget, it's a week from Thursday in Louisville, Kentucky, the big Mid-America Trucking Show. We'll be out there all 3 days. We're going to have a lot of great stuff and great guests. Go to redeyeradioshow.com for more.
Got a few comments. We had played about an hour ago Elizabeth Warren's comments about getting rid of the Electoral College, and already some feedback on email. Yes, we should go to much more of a direct democracy.
Mm-hmm.
From those on the left that are proposing a direct democracy now, they would be completely against it if it worked against them. I remember a few years back when it was Republicans that were screaming that we should get rid of the Electoral College. I find it interesting, and you and I, we've had long discussions on it, and we have asked the question to those on the left, should we get rid of the Senate then?
Right.
If you get rid of the Electoral College, the next thing would be you believe in much more of a direct democracy. Then the Senate would have to go. Would the Senate be just another House of Representatives, which is matched, you know, each district by population, or would the Senate just be all at large? Would you have 100 people that run and you pick the top 50?
Right.
Because in the Senate, we don't proportion by population. In the Senate, Delaware gets as many representatives as California in the Senate. Should the Senate go away? When you talk about a direct democracy, you are then at that point, if you truly wish to get to a direct democracy, the next thing would be the Senate. Why? Because when it comes to legislation, the president really doesn't move the country in a particular direction via legislation.
No.
As we saw with the Obama administration. Everybody sort of forgot, what did he really do? Okay, Obamacare, what else? Well, everything else was what? An executive order, which the next president can overturn.
Well, and even legislation. The next Congress can come in and undo what the last one did. You know, the lasting is impact is at the Supreme Court.
Well, it's the legislation. It's tougher to change legislation because
they can do it.
That's not the where I'm going though. I'm going with the fact that who makes the laws, that if you're somebody on the left and you believe in much more of a direct democracy, the next logical step would be the Senate. You've got to get rid of the Senate because the Senate is where, as we know, so much legislation is passed. much more legislation comes out. Well, the legislation comes out of Congress. It doesn't come out of the executive branch. And so if you really wish to move the nation in a liberal direction and you believe that's where the popular vote is going, well, then you wish to get rid of the Senate. You would have to. That, I guess that's my point.
Right.
And so that would be the next thing, which means then what? What Delaware wants doesn't matter. What Connecticut wants doesn't matter. What New Hampshire wants doesn't matter. What Vermont wants doesn't matter. What Rhode Island wants doesn't matter. What Wyoming wants doesn't matter. What South Dakota doesn't. You have no say in what goes on in the federal government if you go to a direct democracy. The say will come from California, New York, Texas, Florida, and Illinois. You will have the 10 largest cities in America, which will be dictating to everybody else in the country what direction the country goes in. At that point, you would have a civil war. Because if you have no representation, if your geographical area has no representation, there's no reason to be part of the union anymore.
And with blue state policy, what have we seen? People leaving those states.
Yep.
Where are they going? Low tax states. Imagine that trend were to continue to the point where now Texas and Florida dictate. Now you have a different situation population-wise because more people refuse to live in those blue states. Be careful what you ask for. The whole let's go to a popular vote thing is not because it must include doing away with the Senate. There's no other way around that because you can't say, well, no, Delaware should have as many representatives in the Senate as California, and also say, well, on the presidential vote, it must be a popular vote. We have no electoral college. Those two thoughts can't live together because you believe that the bigger states must have the greater say. That has to apply in the Senate.
One of the differences we saw when Obama was in office to Trump coming into office was all of a sudden liberals discovered states' rights. Well, we should be able to do in our geographical area what we wish to do. Remember the whole thing with, you know, we wish in California to have single payer. And we said, well, you're going where we have talked about, which is federalism, which is states control a majority of what they wish to do. The federal government was never designed as a central government to control every aspect of what goes on in Peoria. The federal government was never designed in Washington, D.C., with a group of at-large politicians to control what goes on in Amarillo, Texas, or Burlington, Vermont, or New Orleans. I was thinking of partying, so I thought of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And the whole system was set up where the majority of laws would dictate that your state and your geographical area where you live, that would be, and as close as you can get to the people, those would be the politicians that would be controlling the majority of the policy of what happened. The federal government was always viewed as an umbrella for protection for everybody to do what they wish to do in their particular area, state of the country. That's how it was set up to be. And so when you have the left believing because now they have lost because of the Electoral College, that we need to go to a system where an at-large government, elected government from D.C. would control all the policy, would be the first to erupt in anger and fury when they lose local control.
and they would want to change it back. They would want to do it. Again, this is the liberal mindset. If the rules aren't working for us, change the rules.
Oh, the compact. As soon as it works against them, everybody will, mm-hmm. will bail on that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's understanding why we have the bicameral form of government, why it exists, why we have a Senate, why we have a House, how a House was supposed to be those politicians that are elected, by the way, every 2 years that are directly in those particular smaller districts that can focus on what is needed in that district. And the Senate, which was set up to represent the country as a whole, but a bigger state area represent their state, but have more of a federal overview of what's best for the entire country. It was set up specifically that way. And the Electoral College was so they could get the union together so all the states would know, okay, at least we have some type of an impact. We can have an influence on this country. That we're not lost. We're not going to join this country to become a pawn of some other state. That was the thought process. Our geographical area has to retain some power. Our town, our city, our state, which were a lot smaller back then, needs to do it. But for Colorado to join the compact as they did, the direct democracy means that you have just said what we want doesn't matter. That mm-hmm. our individual vote doesn't matter anymore. It's what the rest of the country does.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that our founding fathers realized even that the states would have, and they didn't phrase it this way, but they realized there would be different cultures in different states. But for whatever reason, the states were to have their control,
yep.
their power, which would include, you know what, the culture in California is different than the culture in Florida.
Well, now the left is furious, has been furious that the federal government wants a role in drugs,
mm-hmm.
in health care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute, we want to do what we want to do now. We want to have a single-payer system. Well, go have that in California. If you want to have a single-payer system, go have it.
Go ahead.
See how that works for you. If you wish to have higher taxes in California, go ahead. Go do it. If you wish to have those laws in California, go do it. Don't put the burden on the rest of the country, though.
No. No, because, again, you know, going back to the whole idea of being be careful what you wish for, as soon as it works against you, there's going to be riots. It should be a popular vote. Great. You still have this mass exodus from blue states. And all of a sudden, you've got other states controlling you. It should never be that way. Ever.
Well, that's the whole point. When they don't get the satisfaction out of the presidency, the next thing in a direct democracy would be the Senate. The Senate has to go.
Right.
Remember, the same makeup is in many states. The majority of states have the same type of makeup with, you know, an assembly type or a House and a Senate form of government there, too, to represent certain geographical areas. Those all have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Majority rules everything. You don't have a choice anymore.
Right.
If you go to a direct democracy, you don't get to choose. You don't have local control. A central government runs it somewhere, and the same rules apply everywhere. Wasn't supposed to be that way.
No.
Supposed to be where the central government was supposed to protect the ability of the states to do what they wish to do, and a general outline of a constitution that protected everybody's rights within that compact of that constitution. Not regulate from that central bureaucracy every little stinking aspect of your life in an at-large kind of voting regulation where the power is concentrated in the population areas and the geographical areas, the majority of geographical areas in that country that are more sparsely populated lose any type of control over their own destiny.
Right. You sit back and wait wait for the inevitable of what the others will do for you.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So I just wanted to address that because every time we bring it up, and I just wanted to, I didn't expect to get into talking about the Electoral College or a direct democracy, but when she brought it up, we got some response on it. So might as well, because we have addressed it many times before, and it seems to be something that the populace love right now, and they all cheer when anybody on the left brings it up. But the populists on the right also in past years have been supportive of getting rid of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to say, well, wait a minute, let's go on. Why do you want it? Why do you want to get rid of it? Well, because we want our presidential candidate.
Right.
Why? Because we want to move forward what we want. Well, then you want the Senate next.
Yes.
Because the Senate can actually move more legislation than a president ever can.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can guarantee that you can have a Senate and a liberal Senate because you control the majority of population in those big states, that would be the next place where you would go.
And you essentially would take all the power from those states that are much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Those small states would sit around and wait for somebody else to do something and hope that it works in their favor.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Wow. This from yesterday. This is just amazing, Eric. Democrat lawmakers admit during private meeting they don't know what anti-Semitism looks like. Oh, Representative Omar did not respond when asked to affirm Israel's right to exist. A meeting of Democratic lawmakers about anti-Semitism in the party included anti-Semitic jokes and unapologetic members of Congress, the Washington Post reports.
Wow.
In the wake of anti-Semitic comments from Representative Ilhan Omar and several closed-door conferences by Democrats to discuss related issues within the party, Representative Andy Levin of Michigan, a Democrat, a former synagogue president, organized a meeting as a more formal event that would focus on anti-Semitism. The March 5th meeting of Muslim and Jewish lawmakers was a moment meant to be about listening and learning about the raw experiences of the elected officials, according to the Post. Levin invited Omar and her allies, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Arianna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan to attend. During the meeting, some Democratic members admitted they didn't know what anti-Semitism looks like, according to the Post. To help manage the conversation, which was previously unreported, Levin invited Bend the Arc, which is a left-wing organization deeply critical of Israel and Republicans. In a recent tweet, the group called for Americans to reject the Islamophobic policies our government is built on. When a Bend the Arc organizer in the room made a joke about Jews and money, Representative Johanna Hayes, a Democrat of Connecticut, questioned why the facilitator could talk like that when someone like herself could not. She later told the Post no one should be making comments of the sort. It's not okay, Hayes said when asked about the specific exchange. These sorts of jokes are off limits. It's confusing for someone like me who is trying to learn. It took nearly 2 hours before a Democrat brought up the repeated anti-Semitism of Omar, the impetus for the entire conversation. Representative Dean Phillips, a Democrat from Minnesota, a Jewish man who represents a district neighboring Omar's, told the room he considered her comments to be tips of the arrow of Jew hatred in America. According to several participants who spoke to the Post on the condition of anonymity, Phillips asked Omar to apologize and publicly affirm Israel's right to exist and protect itself. Phillips requested Omar support the right for Jews to exist in the Jewish state and in the United States, quote, according to the Washington Post, stunned the three Muslim Democrats in the room, end of quote. Omar did not reply to the Jewish member's request. Instead, one of her allies responded by changing the subject. There you go.
Well, we said it would continue. If you're not going to call them out, if the Speaker of the House is not going to call them out directly, then expect more of the same. And here we are. It wasn't going to change. And you know what? It's interesting because what do you see? You see the story, what was it, a couple of weeks ago? That they were going to find the Democrats were going to find a challenger for Omar in her district. By the way, we heard that about Ocasio-Cortez, too. And you, if the Speaker was never going to call her out directly for her behavior, then the only expectation is that you're going to have more of the same. Nothing is going to change. I'm not surprised, are you?
No, not at all. By her anti-Semitic comments, you and I said this a couple of weeks ago. She needs to be asked directly the question.
Right.
And then answer the question, yes or no. Does she believe in Israel's right to exist?
Right.
And defend itself. She was asked by a Democrat in the meeting, according to the Washington Post. As they said, the three Muslim representatives were stunned by the question. I think that if you're on the House Foreign Relations Committee, that's a fair question for another Democrat or anybody to ask you and for you to answer.
Yep.
What is your policy? Right. You represent the Democrats on the House Foreign Relations Committee. What is your platform? Is your platform that Israel does not have the right to exist? Do you believe they should be destroyed? Those are questions I believe she should answer.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't she answer it?
Right. That's a very simple yes or no.
Why won't she answer the question? I'll answer it. Will you answer it?
Yep.
I'd answer the question.
Sure.
We'd all answer. There isn't a question I wouldn't answer.
Right.
Why won't she answer it?
Very simple yes or no. Here's the problem. A non-answer in this case is no.
Yeah.
And that's how I would do the follow-up. So I take it from your non-answer that your answer actually is no. You don't believe that. And give her a chance to correct it.
Since you did bring up Ocasio-Cortez, mm-hmm. More polling out there. About almost 40% of New York voters believe Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez bears responsibility as a villain in Amazon's decision to back out of its plan to put a second headquarters in Queens. Mm. According to a new poll, the Siena College poll, which was released on Monday, found that 38% of New York voters thought that the freshman congresswoman as a villain when they were asked to consider her role in the tech giant's exit. The survey asked respondents to identify figures in the Amazon debate as either a hero, villain, or role player. 12% called Ocasio-Cortez a hero, while 24% said she was a role player. 34% of New York voters listed local Queens activists as villains. About 30% of the respondents viewed both Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio as villains, according to the Associated Press. Amazon itself was considered a villain by 26% of the respondents. Is that I have to ask every question? Are you a villain or a victim?
Right.
Meanwhile, the Siena College poll of New York State voters found Ocasio-Cortez's favorability is underwater with 31%. This is New York State voters, remember. 31% viewing her favorably and 44% viewing her unfavorably.
Uh-oh.
Those results mirror national polling from Gallup and Fox News, who found that Ocasio-Cortez has a net approval rating of minus 10 and minus 13 points, respectively. Ocasio-Cortez notably struggles, even with some members of her own party, with 30% of New York Democrats viewing her unfavorably. Siena also found that voters are not happy with her opposition to the New York City Amazon deal, which two-thirds of New Yorkers supported, according to the poll. More people think that Amazon, Governor Cuomo, Mayor de Blasio, the state Senate, and local Queens activists were villains in this saga than they were heroes, wrote pollster Steven Greenberg. However, voters say the biggest villain was Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Only 12% call her a hero, while 38% label her a villain. She blamed her low favorability on racism.
Yeah.
Sexism.
Right.
Fox News.
Yeah. Fox Newsism.
Fox Newsism.
Mm-hmm. All the isms. There could it go. Be that just people don't care for you? You know, it could be just that. You as an individual. People don't see you as a good lawmaker or representative. So there's the question, because we heard that it was the story, you know, went away pretty quickly. But there were, you know, the according to the story, there was this idea of issuing having someone challenge her in the primary for her seat. And it makes you wonder if somebody will do that even with the party, without the party's help, I guess. If somebody will just step up and say, hey, I'll be a better representative for this district than she has been. And here's the question. How do you do that in that district and appeal to the voters of that district? What would you do? How do you set yourself apart?
She didn't win by a lot of votes. I mean, it's a district where somebody could win her.
Well, no, I know it can be done, but my question is, what do you promote? Do you go out and you promote welcoming Amazon back?
Yeah.
Do you go out and promote tax breaks for corporations?
No, you don't.
So we can
you don't
benefit.
As a Democrat, you don't put it that way. Mm-hmm. You can, as a Democrat, run as a Republican, but you can say we're pro-business. We want more of the great jobs out there that Ocasio-Cortez does not. And even though that Amazon has its problems, they provide great jobs. And this was a headquarters that they were talking about, which would provide many, many great jobs. And we disagree with her. We believe that she doesn't understand how tax incentives are done. She is an economic illiterate, and we need good jobs here in this district and in New York State.
So you run as a Republican? You promote what the Republican
You try to ride the fine line as Cuomo has attempted to do.
Which he's been doing for years, yeah.
Which he's been doing for years, and it's been successful for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, but he has the entire, you know, state.
Right.
In terms of, you know, the makeup of the voter.
Right. But, you know, again, she didn't win her district by a ton. There are people that are dissatisfied with her, And it'd be interesting to see what the negatives are in her district alone.
Yeah, that's my question.
Look, here's another thing too. You promote what you want for the district. Remember, and this is something that you always remember, that when Trump won, mm-hmm. who was it that went to Harlem?
Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal went to Harlem and started asking people in Harlem, why do you think he won? Well, I voted for Hillary, but he actually talked about what we're concerned about. She didn't. Think about this. You want somebody when you vote, and she talked locally. Again, this is a member of the House. And when you're a member of the House, you talk about how you will best represent your district.
Mm-hmm.
Does she seem to be somebody who's considerate of her district? Or she wants to be on the national stage promoting her grandiose plans of how to change the world? And is that who they voted in there? Did they vote somebody to change the world or to help the hardworking people of her district? That's how I would look at it. And I don't know the district, but I'm saying as an umbrella way, if I'm looking at that as a political consultant, that's how I would look at it and say these are some of the mistakes that she has made. She's trying to save the world and she can't save herself. She's clueless. And I think Democrats have come out and even said, look, she's economic illiterate. Democrats have said that. So you don't necessarily have to be a Republican. Democrats are saying that at the moment. The Green New Deal, you have Democrats coming out and saying how absurd it is.
I guess, yeah, my question still remains. I don't know because it's going to go to a Democrat one way or the other, that district.
Well, yeah, you're challenging the primary.
So I don't know what they promote. I don't know what they promote in terms of their agenda. That's different.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the district, so yeah. I can't tell you. But
yeah, that's why I have the question.
What you focus in on the fact is that I'm going to be local. I'm going to do in Congress to help you.
Mm-hmm.
She's out there promoting her crazy ideas to how she's going to save the world. I'm concerned about how we're going to save jobs here in this district. That's how you run.
Well, and that's exactly what she would promote because that was HQ was in her district. You know, I don't want to give. She's going to promote it as I saved the taxpayer a lot of money.
Yeah, they don't agree with that, though. The majority of New Yorkers don't agree with that. And you go with those negatives is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a ton of people in that area that disagree with her on it, that have been vocal on it.
Mm-hmm.
That she doesn't know how it works. She doesn't know how tax. She doesn't know how tax incentives work.
But she doesn't know how anything works.
She doesn't know how anything works. And that's how you promote it. That we have to promote. You know, we have to promote jobs. I'm in it for you. She's in it for her. And I think you can make a strong case, even in Democrat circles.
Well, you probably go the de Blasio way. And that is, no, we want them here, but we want them here, and we want them unionized.
Exactly.
Well, that's exactly.
That's it. Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's the only way you can go.
Right.
We want them here,
right.
and yeah, it'd be great, but we want to make sure they're here, and the workers have a fair shot, blah, 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 union, blah, 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 union.
Right.
On that one issue, that's the only way you can go in that district and set yourself apart from her.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Optics.
Yeah.
Optics in politics, optics in the media, probably not the smartest thing. I might have delayed the announcement if I were the person in charge of Fox News that we were hiring Donna Brazile to be part of our staff.
Now, will she get, during the presidential debate, will she get Trump the questions ahead of time?
After the Judge Pirro situation,
yeah,
I might have waited till I resolved that situation before I hired Donna Brazile, the former head of the DNC. That got a little talk on social media yesterday.
Did they say how long the suspension for Pirro was? Or
no,
I haven't heard anything officially.
And she has not we made this comment yesterday. There's a ton of people out there defending her. She hasn't defended herself yet. I just checked in the last hour. I checked her social media again. Nothing since last weekend. And I don't mean this past weekend. I mean the weekend before.
The lack of activity also could be, I mean, if you think about it, there's a couple of reasons. You just don't want to, you know, bring it up again. Or you're negotiating your exit.
One or the other, yeah.
Because knowing how smart she is about any contract issues, I'm sure she's very knowledgeable. The last thing you would do is tweet anything during any negotiation. You wouldn't say a word about it. Nothing. Nothing. Leave it. And negotiate your exit.
So it's a money thing.
Well, it's, you just want to make sure that if you're walking away, if, you know, because she could be walking away, that if you're walking away, you're walking away with as much as possible. Yeah. Here's your forecast.
Many Nebraska towns have become islands. There are dozens of streams flooded, records broken in Nebraska, many there under evacuation notices. The good news this week looks to be relatively dry for the region, but we do have a low pressure area passing through the state today, which will provide some more potential snow for southern Nebraska. That'll be all rain for Kansas, mainly right between I-80 and I-70 to the south, so along the Nebraska-Kansas state line. That'll be a quick-moving system and out of there by tomorrow. Of course, all that water is going to be flowing downstream toward the Gulf of Mexico through the Mississippi River and other tributaries, and the lowlands of the Mississippi are already experiencing massive flooding, so we'll have more to continue through the week to come. Spring rains arriving early. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The vast majority of Americans have no idea what we're talking about. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. There is the headline, USA Today. Half of Americans say Trump is a victim of a witch hunt as trust in Mueller erodes. Amid signs that special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election interference may be nearing its conclusion, a new USA Today Suffolk University poll finds that trust in Mueller has eroded, and half Americans agree with President Donald Trump's contention that he's been a victim of a, quote, witch hunt. Support for the House of Representatives for seriously considering impeaching the president has dropped since last October by 10 percentage points to 28%. Despite that, the survey shows that the nation remains skeptical of Trump's honesty and deeply divided by his leadership. Well, that's a duh. A 52% majority say they have little or no trust in the president's denials that his 2016 campaign colluded with Moscow in the election that put him in the Oval Office. The number does reflect an improvement over the previous polls. 1 year ago, 57% had little or no trust in his denials. In December, it was 59%. So there you go. 28% say they have a lot of trust in former FBI Director Mueller's investigation, to be fair and accurate. That's the lowest level to date and down 5 points since December.
Yeah, if you've got half of America saying that it's a witch hunt, that's a big deal. I mean, think about if you went back, I don't know, okay, go back a year. Go back a year, maybe, let's say end of 2017, right? So we're full in, you know, full on into the investigation, the whole thing. I would love to go back and because I don't know that witch hunt would have been used back then, although we used it. I mean, it was only the right using it. If you look at, you know, a news organization like USA Today, It's not a conservative news organization. So in this poll, they were using, you know, these words, that term, for a reason, to essentially disprove the president, likely, right? Kind of almost a fact-checking mission.
Maybe.
With a poll.
Yeah, it's a good, that's a great point, by using the term witch hunt.
I mean, it is, they
you,
knew,
you used his term, right?
Right. I mean, they likely know that again, I mean, it's, when you do any poll, you're going to get, you know, whatever you're going to get, but, and they know that the idea, of course, is to, you know, look at the take the pulse of America on, but on those words, though, it's almost like going back to Claire McCaskill and her ad, you know, she's not one of those crazy Democrats. Well, the reason that they use those words is because that was coming back to them in, you know, in her race. That was, their research clearly was, people were repeating those words. Crazy Democrats. Well, here the president has been using those words. So it likely in part was a fact check on the president to see if America agrees with him. That's a big number. Had you come back with, 35%, that would have been right in line, right? With his core base. And the people that support him and likely would vote with him. So I would think 35% would probably, maybe 40% would probably be right in line that they believe it's a witch hunt. 50%, half, is a big deal.
Well, and sometimes, I don't know how much the American public really understands, for example, what we explain. When we say, look, the allegation was Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Then it became, well, he colluded with the Russians to hack the DNC. Then it became he colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. Mm-hmm. It kept evolving what it was.
Right.
And as we said, well, actually, the opposite is true. And then we talk about the fact that the DNC and the Hillary campaign that paid the law firm money, which was campaign money, which then funneled the money to an opposition research group, Fusion GPS, and gave it to a former British spy who went to the Russians and got mostly false, to quote Michael Isakov, who wrote one of the articles that helped get the whole FISA warrant thing going and the dossier thing going as part of the FISA warrant and was used as part of the justification, but got information from the Russians in order to try to destroy the Trump campaign. And when they couldn't do that in time, the whole intent was to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. Then they took that dossier with, quote, from Michael Isakov, mostly false information, and somehow sold it to the FISA court, the secret court, to get a secret warrant to spy on the campaign. Now, do I believe they did it so they could spy on Carter Page? No, they were going after Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear they were going after Trump from the beginning. And so, to us, you want collusion with the Russians, there's where you have it. I don't know how many Americans understand just that point there, and then understand the fact that they got on tape, or digital, whatever you want to call it, they got conversations between members of the Trump campaign, which then a ton of them were unmasked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were unmasked. They got approval to unmask these conversations. Members of the Trump administration, including the former UN ambassador, who said, no, those are not mine. I didn't unmask all those, which means, as we now know, as Trey Gowdy has announced and others, that means somebody had to use her security code or pass to get in on that.
Mm-hmm. Samantha Power.
But somebody was listening to all of that.
Right.
To us, that is absolutely out there, where you and I look at it and we say, well, no. If you want to look and indict somebody politically or criminally, the place to look is the Obama administration, because that's where all the evidence is. I don't know how many people in the United States understand just that basic outline that we have talked about, I don't know, every day for the last 2 years. I don't know how many Americans would even understand what I was saying then.
Well, and if you think about that, I would assume, if I were going to put a number on it, it would be a fairly low number. But still, you have in the poll that 50% find that it's a witch hunt, which is to say that it's going nowhere. It's clearly based on nothing.
Well, is it because they understand what I just outlined, the basic outline, or they just see something that has gone on for such a long time and nothing has stuck to Trump?
I think it's the latter, not the former. You know, and a friend said to me the other day, we were having this conversation, talking about going all the way back and including everything, including how they got the dossier, how they got the warrant for Carter Page, and all of it. And he said something. He said, yeah, but don't you think that there would be some indictments coming down on Democrats already? I mean, if they had found something on Trump or somebody in his campaign related to the election, there's a decent chance, if we are this close to the end of the investigation, that those indictments would have come down by now.
Right.
So wouldn't the same be true for the left if Mueller was looking in that direction? And I said, yeah, but that assumes that he's looking in that direction. Because if he's not,
there's no
then
evidence.
You're not doing a complete investigation.
There's no evidence he's looking in that direction.
Yeah, that was my point.
And we don't know why. We've asked that question. Why wouldn't he look in that direction? Because as an investigator, that's where it would lead you. It would lead you, because if you were Robert Mueller, if you're the investigator, I don't care what your politics is, whether you hate or love Trump, but if you're an investigator and the Congress comes to you, or not Congress, excuse me, the Department of Justice comes to you and says, we want you to find out if Trump colluded with the Russians to do anything to screw up the 2016 election. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever. That's what your responsibility is. Where's the first place you go? Where's the most evidence that exists? The FBI.
Mm-hmm.
You go right to the FISA warrant, because that was the information that they were able to get a secret warrant on. So that has to be the most direct line that you would go to. Well, if you go there, then you head off in one direction to the unmasking, and the other direction, you're backtracking all the way through to the Russians, to Christopher Steele, all the way back. If you don't go that way, and they're into Trump's business dealings and Manafort, well, you went off like in a side direction instead of going directly as to where the information is. And if you went to where the information is, why didn't you go any further? That would be my next question.
Right. Well, because you have to look at the trail of evidence. How is that intelligence gathered? How did you get to, how is it that these supposed known items came to be? Well, you would have to go back and look at why they were looking into this in the first place.
It was around Christmas time. I was having lunch with a friend of mine who I haven't seen in about a year. And she asked me, she's just so busy in her job. And she said, and we're driving to lunch. She said, could you explain to me the whole Trump thing? And I started, and I realized we only had about 5 minutes to get to the restaurant. And I said, actually, I can't. Mm-hmm. But someday, let me sit down with you with a piece of paper.
Yeah, right.
And I'll do the whole flow chart for you. But to tell you what I'll hear, and I realize if I throw all this at her, she's going to go, well, what's this, what's that, what's that? So it's like on a piece of paper, I would actually have to do it and line it out for her. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen her since or talked to her since, so I haven't had the opportunity to do that. But I that always sticks in my mind that she was wondering, very smart person, but just busy with life.
Right.
And, you know, one of those people that was working 80 hours a week at their job. And family responsibilities, and boom, and it's like just, so, Gary, can you give me the 5 minute on it? Well, no, it's too tough to give you the 5 minute on it. You'd have too many questions.
Well, if they ever do this in Hollywood fashion, then they're going to have a number of writers and people who have been, you know, working on it. You know, a whole group of people that have been working on this entire storyline, and it likely would be a 20-year series, like Law and Order. I mean, because in order for it to be fully understood, you really do have to follow the minutiae. And think about Mueller being who he is, his experience in the past and everything else. What if he's not looking at the obvious, if he's not going back to the beginning, which by all indications he's clearly not, then why would he ignore the obvious? Political motivation, we'll put that on the table. That's the most obvious right there at the beginning. And then beyond that, the preservation of the deep state. Because
well,
imagine
I,
what
well,
it would
well,
unravel.
No, I would ask this, that politically, you would politically, why didn't you do it? So the political consequences. Mm-hmm. But then the investigative, why didn't you as an investigator go at it?
Right.
So if you didn't go out as an investigator, is it because you're trying to protect the deep state, which would be political at that
right.
point?
You well, because
it would be a political motivation.
Because if you look at that, if it is as many believe, then they're and that were revealed and they pursued that in a prosecutorial fashion, the trust for the FBI would be at an all-time low.
Well, sorry, that's your job.
It absolutely is. And my question is, this is why I think Republicans want it released. They want him answering questions as to why you didn't pursue
right.
this from the beginning.
Right.
Why didn't you pursue the whole thing?
Oh, that's a great, we'll expand on that coming up. That's a great point. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Dan Todd, and more of your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. If you'd like to get in, 866-90 Red Eye. Also, the latest on the Boeing investigation and yeah. the crash and oversight investigations that are going on now. This is really going into interesting areas because they're going into the development and government regulators and the oversight investigation as to, you know, the design and where are they going here? I mean, what do the investigators think they have?
Right.
Or what are they, maybe not think that they have, what is their suspicion?
In terms of a design flaw or
design
in terms
flaw,
of
software
a
software flaw, what
cover up or
right. Exactly. Yeah, I understand what the investigation is. I'm not sure what they're going after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only time will tell. I've seen a couple of, stories on the design flaw. And we've heard those other stories of pilots who have complained of the
right.
software in the past. Mm-hmm. The question is, I guess, from the responsibility in terms of Boeing, was there a lack of response? Did those pilots issue an official concern, which I would think they would in each case, and were those concerns unanswered by the company?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.